KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders from across the country are providing testimony in Washington, D.C. this week on American Indian and Alaska Native programs. Three hearings are being held in the House Committee on Appropriations, Subcommittee of Interior, Environment, and Related Agencies. Tribal leaders Tuesday morning mentioned how the Trump administration's recent actions, including the federal hiring freeze and layoffs, threaten essential services in Indian country. Tribal leaders are raising concerns about federal funding for healthcare, law enforcement, education, and other services. While tribal leaders are calling on the federal government to uphold trust and treaty obligations, Chief Jay Allen of the Coeur d'Alene Tribe is also urging for strong leadership.
All I'm asking is for leadership for us to come together and work this out.
Allen echoed funding needs for tribal programs, which he says have been historically underfunded, and urged the subcommittee to address tribal concerns. The hearing continues Tuesday afternoon and hearings Wednesday and Thursday. According to the subcommittee, there were an unprecedented number of requests, needing a third day to accommodate around 100 tribes and tribal organizations. The state of New Mexico announced Monday that state agencies are launching support initiatives to help people recently dismissed from their federal employment as the Trump administration seeks to shrink the federal workforce. The initiative includes recruitment events, online resources, and access to education and training opportunities. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham says the state is committed to supporting people into transitioning into new career opportunities. Online resources offer information about unemployment insurance, job search, and career support. Recruitment events will take place in the state in the next couple weeks, featuring employers ready to hire, including the state and local governments and private businesses. New Mexico's congressional delegation has been advocating for the protection of federal employees, including those serving Indian country. A new sponsorship program in Nevada is seeking to get more tribal citizens covered and protected from accumulating debt from uninsured medical care. Alex Gonzalez has more.
According to reporting from KFF Health News, while some tribes already participate in Nevada Health Link's program, they're wanting to get more on board. The initiative allows tribes to buy health insurance through the state's Affordable Care Act marketplace. Advocates such as Jim Roberts with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium contend the sponsorship model increases access to coverage by giving Native folks a chance to search for medical care outside the tribal care system.
I think sponsorship programs bring case management to that process to allow people to understand what their options are so that they can get enrolled. Left to their own devices, this is a segment of the population that might not traditionally enroll in Medicaid or in insurance program.
Roberts adds that because sponsorship in some tribes isn't limited to just enrolled tribal members, it can impact whole communities. But he's worried that under the Trump administration, enhanced tax credits for marketplace enrollees will sunset by the end of the year if Congress doesn't extend them, meaning premiums could go up significantly. Proponents say the sponsorship program is making a difference for Native American patients, but more work is needed to build community trust. While Nevada Health Link used Washington State's program as reference, Roberts says the Silver State's approach is different.
But in terms of Nevada really getting behind it and asking the QHPs to work with tribes to set these up, I think that's unique.
Roberts wants to remind folks they won't lose their Indian Health Service coverage by participating in the sponsorship program, but will rather help fill in vital gaps in the healthcare system.
By providing resources that can then get billed for the care that they're receiving. And likewise, those resources can be used to expand care to the tribal population as a whole. Then it's a win-win situation.
I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members serve to alleviate poverty while earning money for college and gaining professional skills. Rewarding service opportunities can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA. DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com, who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That I thought was stable, that I finally was like, oh, I'll have some stability, has actually been the most unstable thing that's happened to me. It just feels like nothing is really safe anymore.
Even federal workers in far-flung Kotzebue are among those laid off by the Trump administration. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 25th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Fairbanks residents rally in support of Ukraine to mark the third anniversary of Russia's invasion.
I'm here today to support my ancestors and their fight for democracy. And Ukraine's fight for democracy is the world's fight for democracy.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Bethel, March 4th and 5th at the Yupit Bijigiahait Cultural Center to develop federal wildlife proposals and discuss other subsistence issues. A special outreach session with North Pacific Fishery Management Council regarding chum salmon bycatch will be held in the evening of March 4th. Visit doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 for more information. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
All seven members of the Alaska Senate's powerful Finance Committee on Monday proposed rewriting the payment formula for the annual permanent fund dividend, renewing the Senate's effort to replace an obsolete state law that has not been followed since 2015. The Alaska Beacon reports that if signed into law, the bill would split the annual transfer from the Alaska Permanent Fund to the state treasury. 75% of that transfer would be reserved for state services, and the remaining quarter would be used for dividends. This year, that's worth about $1,420 per recipient, according to estimates by the Legislative Finance Division. The effort to rewrite the formula faces long odds, though. Members of the Alaska Senate have supported the 75-25 split proposal since at least 2017, the year before lawmakers enacted the annual permanent fund transfer. At that time, legislators said the dividend formula would be addressed at a later date, but no new formula has garnered sufficient support to become law, and in the meantime, the dividend has been set by fiat each year, becoming the capital's biggest annual issue. For the past 2 years, the dividend amount has been based on the 75-25 split, even though the new formula has failed to become law. The 2024 dividend was boosted by an additional energy relief payment. A new report paints a bleak picture of the impacts of frozen and canceled federal funds in Alaska. The report was released today by the 4-Acre Group, which supports Alaska nonprofits and tribal organizations. Lori Wolf, president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group, said during Talk of Alaska today that nonprofits provide an especially wide range of services in Alaska due to the way the state is structured.
We don't have a county system of government in our state, and so our nonprofits fill the role that county governments would fill in other states. By design, nonprofits fill the gap that either government can't or won't do, and it's not viable in the marketplace.
That means the Trump administration's move to cancel or freeze congressionally approved funds and grants has a broad impact. Nonprofits in Alaska provide health care, public safety, food security, and in some cases even electricity. Of the more than 300 nonprofits that responded to a survey from the 4-Acre Group, half said a funding freeze could shut down their organization. Wolf says that right now, many organizations still have no clarity around whether their federal grants will continue, despite court orders to release many of the funds.
Even if they have been able to access some of the money, which right now they should be able to access all of the money because of those stays from the court, we know that some of them still cannot, and we know that A lot of that is based on the unclear language in the executive orders around their definitions of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Shortly after Talk of Alaska this morning, a federal judge granted a preliminary injunction to the National Council of Nonprofits, extending a temporary restraining order that prevented the Trump administration from moving forward with the freeze. But given the number of groups saying they still can't access their funds, it's unclear whether the Trump administration complied with the restraining order. Probationary federal workers based in Kotzebue joined thousands of other employees fired earlier this month by the Trump administration. Among them was a recently hired park superintendent with lifelong ties to the region. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
6 months ago, Socorric Whiting applied for her dream job as superintendent for the Western Arctic Parklands, managing a nearly 9-million-acre area that spans across three national parks. After a lengthy process, she was selected in early January out of a nationwide pool of dozens of applicants.
It was really humbling because I know there are a lot of people that have a lot of organizational experience within the National Park Service system. So it was very humbling, very exciting.
Whiting had previously served as Northwest Arctic Borough Mayor and Executive Director of Kotzebue's Tribe. She is Inupiaq and a lifelong resident of the region, and says the superintendent position was something she worked towards her whole life.
So I thought about this in high school. I should work on ways to build relationships with our Indigenous people and the federal government.
But on Valentine's Day, Whiting received the news. She had been fired, along with around 30 or so other probationary Park Service employees statewide. The mass firings are an effort by the Trump administration to slash spending by downsizing the federal government. Whiting says the news gutted her.
I felt like I had the worst breakup of my life. Just break up, no rhyme or reason why.
Whiting says it took her about a week to process the news before she was able to talk about it.
But then you can't just keep going with your life feeling like you're in doomsday. So I finally get my strength back and hope and think about what my parents would do, and my parents would persevere. They'd keep going on no matter what's happening around them.
The Federal Workers Union expects at least 1,300 federal employees in Alaska with probationary status to be fired, according to reporting from the Alaska Beacon. These employees span a variety of departments, including Veterans Affairs, military, transportation, and agriculture sectors. The layoffs could also affect seasonal and part-time employees, like federal firefighters. Rachel Heckerman worked as a seasonal employee for the Park Service. As a visual information specialist, her job included working on graphic projects specific to the Western Arctic Parklands, like website development, river guides for visitors, and videography. She was fired the same day as Whiting.
Working under like a Inupiaq superintendent, I was so excited about that. Just to like be within a Park Service community that has somebody that represents the community truly, to see that completely ripped out in under a month, that honestly I think was more of a blow than me getting fired.
She says she found out by email, which notified her the firing was based on her, quote, poor performance and failure to demonstrate qualifications.
It's insulting to find out that it's your poor performance, even though I have paperwork and documentation that completely proves otherwise.
Heckerman says another blow was losing her health insurance, which expires in a month. She has a chronic medical condition that requires daily medication. Heckerman says, in addition to doing a job she loved, which blended her passion for science and art, healthcare was a huge motivation when she accepted the job over 3 months ago.
Thing that I thought was stable, that I finally was like, oh, I'll have some stability, has actually been the most unstable thing that's happened to me. It just feels like nothing is really safe anymore.
Heckerman says she's fortunate. She has enough medication to last a while, and she works remotely. For some, especially federal employees who live in rural Alaska communities, losing their job could also mean losing housing.
Some people moved across the country and then essentially just got fired and like have no housing. If I lived in Kotzebue, I would have lost my housing. And that's really alarming.
Heckerman says she is now looking for employment and might resort to freelance work. She says she's scared to take chances with another federal job out of fears that it could be eliminated under the current administration. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, farmers in Delta show support for Governor Dunleavy's proposal to establish a Department of Agriculture.
Farm Bureau, this has been the number one priority on their list for 30 years.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A woman at a park in Anchorage's Mountain View neighborhood died last night after police say she was shot from outside her motorhome. Police say officers responded to the shooting at Davis Park on Mountain View Drive just after 7 p.m. A bullet had entered the vehicle and struck the victim in the chest. Medics took the woman to a local hospital, where she later died. Police have not yet released her name and say they are still notifying her family. Officers spoke with witnesses at the park, which currently hosts a homeless encampment, but have not yet made any arrests. Police ask anyone with information about the shooting or surveillance video from the area to call them at 311. A couple dozen Fairbanksons rallied on a main street corner yesterday in an impromptu marking of the third anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. KUAC's Robin reports.
They waved Ukrainian and American flags and carried anti-Russian banners and signs. Women had sunflowers in their headpieces, wrapped in yellow and blue ribbons over their coats. Sveta Yamin Pasternak says Alaskans need to take note of what's happening in Ukraine because they have much in common with people there.
And I think especially it is relevant for all of us as Alaskans because we truly do share the same values with Ukraine. We also, unfortunately, are currently sharing a hostile neighbor.
She held a banner that said, "Solidarity, Alaska and Ukraine, many great values, one bad neighbor in common." Ryan Tinsley held up the other end.
You have a full-on assault against Western democracy, you know, led in part by Putin and his misinformation. And I think there is more and more in common with the fight in Ukraine.
Stacy Fritz has joined a small group on this street corner several times in the last 3 years. She's hoping for peace, but she doesn't think it will come through President Trump.
His first effort to make peace excluded the Ukrainians. That's the opposite of sincere, good effort to make peace. And today he refused to go along with the UN resolution condemning Russia for illegally invading Ukraine. Sure, everybody wants the war to end. There's a simple way to do that. Russia and Putin can get out of Ukraine.
Zelensky is offering to step down from his position if Ukraine will be part of NATO, which is showing the whole world that he's not a dictator, but he is the true president who actually cares about his country and the true peace.
Katerina Verbeska is a dual citizen of the United States and the Czech Republic.
Because we were occupied by the Soviet Union for over 20 years. So that's one of the reasons why I'm here, to support Ukraine, because I know how it feels. I lived under the occupied country just for a little bit, but I know it from my parents and, of course, from the history.
She joined in singing a traditional Ukrainian song that has become symbolic for resistance against Russia after it was sung on a main square in Kyiv a few days after the invasion on February 24th, 2022.
I am half Czech myself. My father was a Czech refugee who escaped from Soviet Union. and I learned a lot about the importance of fighting for a cause.
Musician Paul Krejci played because he said music is a way to build solidarity and show where one is standing on an issue. He feels betrayed by a giant reversal of U.S. policy toward Ukraine. President Donald Trump is bargaining for Ukraine's rare earth minerals and last week withdrew weapons and financial support for Ukraine's fight against the Russian invasion.
I think many people who have grandfathers, grandparents who fought in World War II would find this revolting. It's traitorous, I would say. And to have the President of the United States leading this cause, it is something that's a sucker punch, you know, to those who have fought for freedom for this country since its birth.
He started up the song again and was joined by Marianne Babbage. She's Ukrainian-American, born in Chicago after her parents fled Russian occupation 90 years ago.
I feel terrified and impotent. That's why it was so good to sing that song. And I'm still kind of choked up about it, honestly. And I'm here today to support my ancestors and their fight for democracy. And Ukraine's fight for democracy is the world's fight for democracy.
Hey,
in Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
More than 100 people showed up Saturday for the 53rd annual Delta Junction Farm Forum, and most who showed up expressed strong support for Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposal to establish a State Department of Agriculture. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
It shouldn't come as a surprise that a room full of farmers and ranchers favor the governor's proposal, but many of those in attendance, like longtime area farmer Ruby Hollenbeck, said the proposal isn't really to create a new agency, but rather to reinstate one that had been in existence in territorial days.
In 1945, the Alaska Department of Ag was created. Prior to statehood, there was a territorial commissioner of agriculture who headed the Alaska State Department of Ag.
Hollenbeck said the department was folded into the State Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, back in the early 1960s. She and others believe that's because Alaskan leaders were focused on developing the state's oil and gas reserves and less attentive to producing food.
So it then became a division under DNR, and that's when the struggles happened.
Alaska Farm Bureau President Scott Mugridge says he and other farmers who came to Delta in the 1980s have for years been asking for an agency dedicated to the agriculture industry.
Farm Bureau, this has been the number one priority on their list for 30 years.
Dunleavy advisor Andrew Jensen said the governor's proposals intended to restore a cabinet-level commissioner to support the industry and improve the state's food security.
But we're trying to really be proactive, and I think that that's what this agriculture executive order really represents. It's a continuation of these efforts.
Mugridge says the new department would give the industry the authority it needs to thrive.
You know, we've got to take a little bit of responsibility back on ourselves and do more to produce more here, and we can. We can produce more, but we need those marketing help.
Jensen said in an interview that Dunleavy's hopeful the legislature will support the proposal to get the new department up and going by July 1st. But lawmakers like Anchorage Democratic Senator Matt Klayman says many voters see education funding as a higher priority.
How do I make the case to them and say, this year it is so important that we fund this new Department of Agriculture that we need to take $2.7 million away from what we could put toward education and put that toward this new department.
But Jensen said the governor feels strongly that the time is right. He says even though money is tight, the cost is a small price to pay.
When you look at something like food security, which is what this Department of Agriculture is to address, you know, priorities, this is one. And I think when you look at the cost of it, it's pretty reasonable for the mission that it's intended to achieve.
DNR has seven divisions that oversee important sectors of Alaska's economy, like oil and gas, mining, and land and water, all of which can make it hard to focus on agriculture.
The way it's structured now, the division does compete against other priorities within the department. Food production should not compete with oil production in terms of being a priority for the state.
Jensen said $2.7 million will cover salaries and other expenses needed to stand up the agriculture department, and most of its staff would come from the current agriculture division.
DNR has over 1,000 employees, and we're going to be moving 37.
The legislature is expected to vote on the governor's proposal by March 22nd. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, providing telecommunication services to tribal health organizations and nonprofit rural health providers, enabling telehealth services for Alaskans. More at gci.com/healthcare. How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Seward's roughly 60-year-old cruise ship dock is on track to get a $140 million makeover. That's after the Alaska State House passed a bill last week that ups the amount of money developers have to work with. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, stakeholders say the project will revitalize aging infrastructure and expand regional economic opportunities.
Where the frigid waters of Resurrection Bay lap at the edge of Seward, two strongholds of Alaska tourism meet. The iconic blue and yellow Alaska Railroad reaches the end of its tracks in the small town, which embraces its slogan of Alaska Starts Here. It's also the starting point for visitors coming by sea. Everyone seems to agree that the Alaska Railroad's existing cruise ship dock and terminal has seen better days.
The dock is clearly nearing the end of its useful life.
That's Jane Pearson speaking to members of Alaska's House Finance Committee last week. She works for the Seward representative carrying the bill to up the debt limit.
In over 50 years of use, the dock's pile foundation has corroded, and there are now limits on the dock's remaining useful life, and weight restrictions are being implemented.
If it passes, the bill would more than double the amount of bond debt the Alaska Railroad Corporation is allowed to take on to get the project done, up to $130 million. The corporation needs legislative approval to sell any bonds, kind of like how a city or borough needs voter approval on bond initiatives. Alaska Railroad CEO Bill O'Leary says the project's benefits would go beyond Seward. The corporation estimates that more than 200,000 cruise ship passengers visited Seward last year, with many adding on to trips in other parts of the state.
And it is not just a South Central project, not an interior project, but it does immediately impact both of those sectors. But it also has a significant impact to the Southeast market, providing an avenue for cruise ships to come across the Gulf.
And Seward City Manager Kat Sorensen says the terminal is designed for year-round use, which makes it appealing to the city and community for off-season access.
Over the past few years, as this project has been explored and discussed around town, I already hear the Seward community planning and scheming up amazing ideas to work with the railroad, hosting events and community gatherings in the tourism off-season.
Sorensen says the railroad's plans also dovetail nicely with the $46 billion federal grant the city got last fall to add shore electricity to the dock. The bill currently moving through Juneau actually made it across the finish line last session, but there was a hiccup. It was one of five bills passed by lawmakers after midnight on the last day of the session. Pearson says the bill's timely passage this session is imperative to ensure construction can continue as planned and so Royal Caribbean Cruises can honor trips it's already started selling.
They've already started selling bookings on the ships. Just by having this bill vetoed last year, it was really put a stop in the whole project.
Royal Caribbean is an important partner in the project. The company would enter into a three-decade agreement and become the anchor tenant at the dock, which is designed to the specifications of the company's ships. Royal Caribbean will then use its dock revenue to pay the debt off. Preston Carnahan is the company's regional vice president of destinations. He says the new dock will be able to accommodate the Royal Caribbean's Quantum class of ships, which are the largest sailing in Alaska.
We're excited as a visitor to your state to continue to bring a lot of happy guests on our ships.
If all goes according to schedule, construction on the new dock will start fall of 2025 and be completed next spring. Now that the bill has cleared the state house, it heads to the Senate. Reporting in Soldotna, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race kicks off this Saturday with a parade-like ceremony through downtown Anchorage, but the route is significantly shorter this year due to the lack of snow. Race officials announced today that the ceremonial start will end at the Sullivan Arena instead of the Campbell Airstrip, making the route about 1.5 miles instead of the usual 11 miles. Andy Angstman, the Musher representative on the Iditarod's board of directors, says it's disappointing to lose so much trail, but he's happy to have any sort of ceremonial start. That's because Anchorage is having a historically low snow winter.
I was personally surprised they were able to find enough snow to truck in to do any kind of ceremonial start, so I'm pleased they were able to pull that off. The fact they were able to get any snow at all is a bonus.
The ceremonial start will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday. The 33 teams will leave the starting line at 4th Avenue and D Street at 3-minute intervals. They'll head down 4th Avenue, turn right onto Cordova Street, continue down the Cordova Hill, and then turn left on 16th Avenue and end at the Sullivan Arena. After the ceremonial start, mushers will truck about 350 miles north to Fairbanks for the official race start at 11 a.m. on Monday, March 3rd at Pike's Waterfront Lodge. Race officials moved the start to Fairbanks because of Bear Trail on part of the route out of Willow. The 2,500-mile Iron Dog Snow Machine race finished in Big Lake on Saturday, and as KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, the race had an unusually high number of scratches, thanks in part to that unseasonably snowless section of trail.
With hands pumping in the air, Team 20's Bradley George and Robbie Shackle ride side by side for the final quarter mile of this year's Iron Dog Snow Machine race. They wait until the last possible moment to slow down. Race director Mike Vassar greets them as they pull into Big Lake.
Let's have a big round of applause for Team 20. Good job, guys. You're 2025 Iron Dog champions.
Vassar hands a microphone to George moments after he crosses the finish.
Thank you to everybody who put this together. Mike, all the volunteers, everybody that is a part of Iron Dog, making this happen, everybody that supported us, sponsored us, family, friends. Thank you guys so much for making this happen. This is awesome.
A standout feature of this year's race was an unseasonably snowless 60-mile stretch called the Farewell Burn, which forced teams to stop and wait for their overheating machines to cool down. Vassar says the burn added over an hour to average course times. Roughly half of this year's 30 teams made it to the finish, the lowest since 2020 when just under half of the field finished. Other finishers included Team 14's Casey Boylan and Brian Leslie, who came in second for the third year in a row. Rounding out the podium was Team 7's Tyler Acklestad and Aaron Lawyer. Team 4's Wilson Hogendorn and Bubba McDaniel made waves in their first Iron Dog appearance. The duo from Nome finished 6th and were named Rookies of the Year. This year's Iron Dog included over $250,000 in prizes, with the top team taking home $80,000. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, Madeline Rose, Chris Clint, and Ava White in Anchorage, Robin in Fairbanks, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Ashlyn O'Hara in Soldotna, and Ben Townsend in Nome. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line 1, your health connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
I used to live my life in fear, was worried all the time, from waking up to laying down. I had no peace of mind. The world became a darkened place, a struggle without end. Although bitter times those were, the days that I began to understand, I was only a man. I grew up singing songs in church with questions in my mind, then turned my back and ran away from God who gave me life. Then one night His presence fell, I wept and shook in it. I fell down and cried, "Dear Jesus, rescue me again. I understand, I am only a man." And He said, "What will it be now? Will you choose me or keep swimming upstream now? I've been inside your head, hearing you scream out. But here I am, just take my hand and I'll take out all of the pain and all of the fear, all of the fear."
Wherever you lead.
forgot to mention, never learned my lesson. Whoa, 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 I got some damn bad intentions. Whoa, I got some damn bad intentions. I got some secrets I forgot to mention, never learned my lesson. Whoa.
The scars of your love remind me of us.
APIA is pleased to announce that our Employment Training and Related Services Division will be traveling to the region in February to share resources and information about workforce development, training, educational scholarship opportunities, the Tribal Vocational Rehabilitation Program, and our child care services. Please stop by and visit our staff in St. Paul February 23rd through March 2nd or contact Kiara Johnson at kiaraj@apiai.org or 907-222-9762 for more information.
This message is brought to you by the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association.
I don't wanna know, no, 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 who's taking you home, 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 and loving you so, 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 the way I used to love you, no, I don't wanna know, no, 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 who's taking you home, 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 and loving you so, 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 the way I used to love you, oh, I don't wanna know, wasted, and the more I drink, the more I think about you. Every place I go reminds me of you. So, so, the way I used to love you, oh, I don't wanna know. And every time I go out, yeah, I hear it from this one, hear it from that one, that you got someone new, yeah. I see but don't believe it, even in my head, you're still in my bed, maybe I'm just a fool.
No more hashtag booed up screenshots. No more trying to make me jealous on your birthday. You know just how I make you better on your birthday. Oh, do you like this? Do you like this? Do you let down for you, touch you, put you like this? Matter of fact, never mind. We gon' let the past be. Maybe he is right now, but your body still.
I don't wanna know. No, no, no. Who's taking it home? I'm loving you so, 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 so. The way I used to love you, no, I don't wanna know. No, no, no. Who's taking it home? I'm loving you so, 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 so. The way I used to love you, oh, I don't wanna know. No, no, who's taking you home? I'm loving you so, 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 so. The way I used to love you, oh, I don't wanna know. No, 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 who's taking you home? I'm loving you so, 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 so. The way I used to love you, oh, I don't wanna know.
Why should we break up if we keep making up? I mean, let's just stay together.
Together we make this relationship a little harder, at least on ourselves. We give and we take from each other so much that I feel we don't need no one else. We fuss and we fight, then the next day we tight. This is crazy, girl, you need some help. Girl, if you pull up to my window, I'ma words into soft-spoken words that will lead you right into my arms. The perfect equation, like Amen plus B equals why we are probably apart. No one on this earth is like Miss Butterworth. It's someone I'd do anything for. It seems like you're pouring your heart away. But if you
pull up to my window, I'ma take your order.
Turn me off, I want it on. And I'm walking on a wire, trying to go higher. Feels like I'm surrounded by clowns and liars. Even when I give it all away, I want it all. Different way than play the game. And no matter the weather, we can do it better. You and me together forever and ever. We don't have to worry about a thing, about a thing. No.
just one day. Watch this madness, colorful charade. No one can.